Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Devon Insight's first speaker seminar for 2024. I'm your host, Graham Flynn, Chief Executive of Devon Insight. Exeter Community Energy's Healthy Homes for Wellbeing project is here to support you with energy and money-saving advice. We are delighted to have Tara Bowers, Healthy Homes Project Manager from Exeter Community Energy, here with us today. Good morning, Tara.
Hi Graham, thanks for inviting me and for allowing me time to speak to your service users.
Well, welcome. So, can you tell us a bit about Exeter Community Energy?
Yeah, sure. So, Exeter Community Energy is a service to support the community around all things energy related. We started in 2014, so actually in a couple of weeks' time we celebrate our 10th anniversary.
Wow.
Which is amazing. And we were basically an offshoot from Transition Exeter.
Uh-huh.
Transition Exeter is all about sustainability issues. And back about 10, 12 years ago, there was a group of people who were interested in doing some energy work. And that was all renewable energy related. And they did work for a few years at what's called community-owned energy. That was our foundations. And that's a model where we buy solar panels and we put them on top of large roofs, typically community buildings, and then the users of those buildings buy cheap energy from us rather than from a supplier, and then we sell any surplus energy that we generate from those panels to the grid and make some money. All of that money that originally that we use to buy those panels is from investments from the community, so individuals like you and I can invest in Exeter Community Energy. That money is all to pay for those solar panels, and then every year we pay those investors a 5% dividend. And any profits that are left go back into the community by way of a community fund. So Devon Insight, for example, could apply for a grant from us to do energy-related work in your offices, for example.
Cool.
So that's the community-owned energy side. So that was our foundations. But one of our founders, Jill, in 2017, she decided it was time that we branched into energy advice. So in 2017, she started the Healthy Homes for Wellbeing project, which I've been running since 2020. And that project's all around free energy and money-saving advice designed to help residents who are either on low incomes or who are vulnerable in some way to make sure that their energy bills are correct, that they're warm and well in their homes, that they're not spending too much on their energy, and any other services that we can add into that service to help make life better for people. More recently, we've also launched a third project, which is our retrofit service. And that's for residents looking for energy advice that don't fall into the bracket of being low income or vulnerable. So there's a lot of people out there that want to know more about improving their homes to combat climate change, to reduce carbon emissions, and don't know where to go for advice. So we've started a new service as well to help that sector. So we're really branching out to lots of new areas of energy, really expanding. We feel like we're really pivotal in the area in terms of helping to champion change, you know, make sure that we're not wasting energy going forward as we, you know, it's one of the really key things we need to do to combat climate change is reduce our energy demand.
Mm. Now, I think it's really important that we say, despite having the word Exeter in your title, you actually cover a wider area than that, and where there isn't provision from yourself, there are other providers. So let's just talk a little bit about your geographical area as an organisation.
Sure. So yeah, so whilst the organisation is called Exeter Community Energy, we do tend to use our little acronym,
yeah,
more so, which is ECO, E-C-O-E. So people get to know us as ECO, and therefore they're not bamboozled by the word Exeter. But yes, so we did obviously start off in Exeter. That's our route. But the energy advice services, both for Healthy Homes and for Retrofit, we deliver those in 5 districts across Southern Devon. So that's Exeter, East Devon, Mid Devon, Teignbridge and Torbay. Now, we're really blessed that we're part of a collaboration called Energy Saving Devon. Now, Energy Saving Devon is basically managed and held by Devon County Council.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a consortium and collaboration of all of the district councils, including the unitary authorities of Plymouth and Torbay. It also includes public health, Devon Public Health, and Trade and Standards. And also it includes 5 community energy groups. So the 5 community energy groups all have a geographical patch across Devon. but the whole of Devon is covered for the energy advice services. So everything I'm going to describe as what we do is pretty much the same across the county. Each energy group has slightly different funding and offers slightly different services, but the core energy advice and the home visit service that we'll talk about shortly is available across the county. I can't speak for other counties, it's different across the country, but there are lots of community energy services across the UK. So if there's anybody listening in or listening later on after today, the best advice to give you is to contact your local authority and ask them what energy advice services there are in your area, and they'll be able to signpost you to the relevant organisation. For anybody listening from Devon, if you can't find who your local group is, contact us and we'll put you in contact with them.
Fantastic. And we will have information available in the office as well. So, okay, let's go back to your Healthy Homes project. Can anyone access support through that project?
Yes and no. So it's a funded project. So obviously, I mentioned about the community-owned energy that we have, the solar panels. Sadly, we don't make enough profit from those energy panels to pay for all of the free energy advice. So we do have to apply for funding. So some of the funding comes with criteria, but what we try to do is say, well, anyone can ring our helpline or contact us through our referral process, and we will try to help as best we can. That might mean that we can only signpost someone to another service, but we'll never just say no and turn anybody away. In terms of the kind of core services, particularly home visits, which is the main thing that people come to us for, to have an energy advice home visit, there is criteria around those, okay. But generally speaking, we're here to help households with an annual income of £31,000 or below, or if there's any welfare benefits in place, including attendance allowance and PIP, those kind of things, or if there's some kind of severe vulnerability or disability in the property, whether that's an adult or a child. So that's the kind of rough criteria we look at. But as I say, we wouldn't say no to anybody. If anybody contacted us with an energy-related question, we'd try to help.
So there's a similarity here, really, to the Devon and Somerset Fire and Rescue Service and their criteria for home visits. And basically, the majority of our clients fit under that acute illness stroke disability criteria. Yes. So any of our clients who are living with a level of sight loss that impacts on their lives would fit within that criteria.
I would say so, yes.
Yeah, so that's brilliant. So everything's pertinent to everybody who's involved. Let's talk about, when I was looking at your website, there was a mention of LEAP. Mm-hmm. Could you just tell us what that is?
Yeah, sure. So LEAP is one of the services that we deliver. LEAP is a national organisation, stands for Local Energy Advice Partnership, and the clue's in that word partnership, that they work, so it's a funded project, it's actually funded by energy companies, so part of the profits and also some of the fines that energy companies have go into various pots of money. Yeah. One of the pots of money is called energy company obligation. So that's actually comes from some of the green levies that are on our energy bills. Mm-hmm. And within the energy company obligation, some of that money goes off for grants to help improve homes like loft insulation, cavity wall insulation, upgraded boilers and so forth. But some of that money goes into a separate pot called industry innovation. And it's that industry innovation pot that funds LEAP. In a roundabout way, it's energy companies that are supporting LEAP. And the way LEAP works is they have a national telephone advice service, mm-hmm. And also they have a home visit service where they're working with local partners. And in Devon, the energy groups in Devon are all partners to LEAP. So anybody living in Devon that contacts LEAP will be offered a home visit through one of the community energy group partners across the county. And the LEAP home visit is a brilliant way for us to get into homes and really help people, because we can give advice over the telephone, but actually seeing the home and seeing how people use their energy, maybe helping to read meters or helping to set heating controls, and just, you know, being able to be face to face with someone and show them what to do in the home is the best way for us to help people. So having a LEAP home visit is a great thing to do. But we also have other home visits available. We have lots of different funding, so we can do all kinds of different home visits, but LEAP is one of those things.
Fantastic. Now, obviously, we have a degree of duty of care for our clients, particularly when we're, although we don't as a charity recommend people, we do work in partnership with people like yourselves and the Devon Fire and Rescue Service. Is your service impartial?
Oh yes, absolutely. So we're not tied to any energy groups. So whilst we do have some funding that comes from energy companies, so as I mentioned, through LEAP, that's funded through energy companies, and we also have a pot of funding that comes from British Gas Energy Trust, but it's very separate to the supplier. It's that through their charitable arm. So we're not tied to give advice about any particular energy supplier. We're not tied to any installers. All of our team are trained to a high standard. They all have qualifications relevant to the advice they're giving. And our service is for the resident. We're there to help the resident get the best from their home and from their energy supply. And yeah, we're just always looking for the best solutions, really. So it might be that we would recommend a particular energy supplier because of their tariff, but it'd be based on understanding the needs of the individual and whether that tariff suits that individual. It's not like a blanket, oh, we're always going to recommend, you know, EDF or something. That's not what happens. It's very much a bespoke, tailored advice service. Down to the questions that we ask and the answers that we get from the resident will dictate the advice that we give.
So it's the same as us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly the same as us.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned earlier home energy advisors. What is it that your home energy advisors are able to help people with?
Oh, wow, there's a massive list of things that
we
do. but generally speaking, we'll tackle some core things with an individual, whether that's a telephone advice or whether that's on a home visit. It's pretty much the same sections of advice that we work through. So we'll think about the property itself, and we'll want to know how well insulated the property is so that we can give advice about what needs to be done to improve that. And we'll also think about drafts, so we'll give some advice about ventilation as well as draft proofing. We also will look at heating. So we need to think about whether the heating is adequate for the property. Does it need upgrading? Is it working properly? Do we need to help find grants to repair or replace heating? Also heating controls. We help set heating controls. We get lots of calls in the winter from more elderly people saying that they can't get their heating controls set properly and they're too cold. So we'll send somebody in to help set heating controls and just make sure that people are getting the right efficiency from their heating system. We do a lot of work around bills, so we're checking that energy bills are correct, reading the meters, make sure tariffs are right, make sure there's no mistakes on the bills. We can liaise with the supplier if there are problems, so we, particularly on a home visit, we'll do a three-way call perhaps with the resident and the energy supplier to try and resolve problems. We make sure that residents are getting all the right discounts on their energy and water bills. We can show people how to use their smart meters, get the best from their smart meter controls. We also do some money advice, so we can do benefits checks. And we also have debt advice. We have accredited debt advisors on our team, so we can help with any debt advice too and budgeting help. When we're on a home visit, we can also fit what we call easy measures, simple things that we fit on the spot. So we'll fit light bulbs, change light bulbs to LEDs. We can fit some draft proofing. The team and the energy advisors carry lots of gadgets in the back of their car. So they carry standby plugs. They carry radiator panels that go behind radiators to reflect heat back into the room. We have things like chimney balloons to block up drafty chimneys that are no longer used. We also carry in stock now tumble dryer balls.
Right.
Which is quite a new thing for us because we became aware that by using tumble dryer balls, when you're using a tumble dryer, speeds up the drying time by up to 20 minutes.
Really?
So it's a really good cost saving. So we supply those now on our home visits. And the other thing we've started to carry over the last couple of years is heated throws. So if we feel that somebody's particularly vulnerable, if they're living in a very cold house and their bills are very high, we might offer them a free heated throw. So there's lots of different things that we can do as part of that home visit or telephone advice. And then obviously lots of onward referrals. So you mentioned the fire service earlier. Obviously that's one of the things we're thinking about when we're in a home. Is there any dangers? Is there a lack of smoke detectors and that kind of thing? Mm-hmm. But we'll also be making other referrals through to the council if necessary, or to charities like yourself if we feel that's appropriate. So yeah, we're just looking for lots of lots of ways to provide a holistic service while we're there.
Fantastic. There's a couple of things I've got in my notes here. Priority Services Register.
Yeah, so the Priority Services Register is a free register which is delivered by the National Grid.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the energy suppliers have access to that. And also the gas grid and the water utilities also have priority services registers. So one of the things that the team will do while they're talking to any resident will be to check if they're eligible to go onto that free priority services register. And we really recommend it because it's a good way of being kept informed, particularly on the electricity side of things, if there's any problems with supply, whether that be a planned maintenance on the grid or whether it's a storm. I actually had a power cut last week. I was in the middle of doing a Zoom call, and luckily it was coming near to the end. But yeah, my power went off and I was off for 2 hours. I'm not on the priority services register myself, but if I had been, I would have probably within a few minutes had a text through to tell me that what the estimated time would be to get me back onto power. And obviously if it's a planned maintenance, it's really good because you're sent a letter in advance to say, power's going to be off next Wednesday or whatever it is, make alternative plans if you need to. So it's a really good management tool, and there's lots of extra support in the event of emergencies. Charities come out and help our residents, and particularly anyone that's got medicine in fridge or medical equipment that they rely on, obviously, for comfort, then it's really important to be on the priority services register.
Fantastic. I've also got here on my list warm home discount.
Yeah, so the warm home discount actually changed last year. So we used to help residents to apply for the warm home discount. So that's a discount on your energy bills. It changed last year now that that's just automatically applied by the suppliers if you're on the relevant benefits. So we can help. If anyone has questions about that, we can help. But it's not something we directly get involved in now as the rules changed on it.
Fantastic. Let me have a look down my list here. There's one thing that I just wanted to go into a little bit more detail about, and that's smart meters.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let's talk smart meters. always in the news. I've got a smart meter. I've had a smart meter in my current house. I've got a smart meter in my old house. Let's just talk about why they are being introduced and the benefits of them, and also myth bust, I suppose.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, go
on. So we actually back quite a few years ago now, we had quite a lot of training from the Smart Energy GB is the rollout partner for the government. Most of our team are what we call smart energy champions.
Yeah.
We have lots of knowledge on smart meters. The reason they're being rolled out is it's part of a national infrastructure upgrade. So the national grid that we've mentioned a couple of times already is a very old, antiquated supply system. It's been around for donkey's years. You think about how we've changed as a nation, even in the last 20 years, you know, the number of new houses that have been built, the number of new gadgets we all have. You know, there's such a demand on our electricity grid these days, much more than there used to be.
Mm.
And frankly, the grid can't cope. It's just not up to the right standard that we need for the future, particularly when we think about electric vehicles coming online and where we'll all need to be charging our vehicles overnight, perhaps. And also heat pumps, which perhaps we'll get a chance to talk about in a little while. But all of these things are a greater demand on the national grid. And one of the best ways for the national grid to manage the grid better is to know exactly what everyone's using at any given time. And the only way they know that is if we've all got smart meters. Because at the moment what happens is they have to kind of guess, and they're pretty experienced at guessing, but they have to guess how much power to send down the cables, for example, to Exeter. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to kind of just put enough power there for us all to keep the lights on all day. Whereas with smart meters, because the smart meters are sending data back through the data hub, they can see exactly where the power is being used at any given time, so they can move the power around the grid much better. What that means is overall, they estimate that they'll save 10% of energy just by managing the grid better. That's a massive saving overall for a country. And you just think about the carbon emissions alone. It's huge. It's really, really huge. So for us, at Exeter Community Energy, that's what we're all about. We want to reduce carbon emissions. So installing smart meters is an absolutely imperative part of our future to better manage electricity demand.
So for our clients who are visually impaired, one of the things that we often get is people who are struggling to read their traditional meter.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's bad enough to do if you're sighted.
Protecting it up on the ceiling or down on the stairs.
Yeah, my old house, it was in a cupboard under the floor, you know, in the dining room. This means that basically the supplier is being advised of your actual power usage.
Yes.
There is no estimation here.
No, it's
live.
Absolutely, it sends the data. So you some of the myth busting that you mentioned. So basically, we had a kind of first phase of smart meters, so what we call generation one, first generation smart meters, and obviously, with all new technology, there's always teething problems. So there were problems with the first generation smart meters. And the main problem with those is that it was hard to change supplier once you had a smart meter, because unfortunately, the energy suppliers didn't talk to each other very well at the beginning, and they were all installing different kinds of smart meters. So then when you change supplier, the smart meter didn't move with you. So it got quite a lot of bad press. But we're now on second generation smart meters, and they are very easy to remove from energy supplier to energy supplier. So what happens is when you've got your smart meter, it sends the data through the data hub to the national grid, as I mentioned, but also all of the suppliers get the meter readings the same, so that data is automatically sent through and they get the meter readings. So whether that's sending it every 30 minutes, which is kind of the standard, or you can say when you have your smart meter installed, you can say how frequently you want to send the data. So some people have been worried about the radio waves, because it's all that data is all sent by radio waves. So a lot of people worried about the electromagnetic frequency stuff. It's actually a very tiny amount of EMFs that are emitted by the smart meters. When you think about, we all have mobile phones, we're getting far much more off of our mobile phones than we are from a smart meter. But still, if people are worried about that, you can say, I'll only send the data like every month, or even I think annually is still an option. So if you're really worried about it, you can just have your smart meter.
But if I look at the, we had an article in our last magazine, and it says here that smart meters typically produce 1 million times less than the guideline level.
Absolutely, it's tiny, so it's tiny. But nevertheless, we can't. It's still a risk. If that's something you're worried about, then it is still a risk. But it is tiny compared to. I was told on the training some years ago, you're bombarded with them in a supermarket. So if you go into a supermarket, you've got all the stuff going on the tills and all the other electronic gizmos they've got around the property. You've got so much of this radio wave stuff going on around you that actually you never get anywhere near that much in your own home. Yet we never question going into a supermarket, for example. So it's kind of like putting it into perspective, I think. The benefits of smart meters to individuals are definitely, you don't have to do your meter readings. The smart meter does it for you. Which means that you always get accurate bills based on your usage. You'll never get an estimated bill. It also means that you can see what you're using. So you get with your smart meter, the smart meter just goes wherever your meter is, outside, under the cupboard, wherever that was. But you get with it what's called an in-home display. And the display can help you see what you're using. Now, a lot of people find that really helpful because it helps you spot problems. And I've got a really good story. A couple of years ago, in my last property, I had a smart meter and an in-home display. And I live alone, and I knew that I was roughly, at that time, this was pre-energy price rises, I was using about £1 a day in electricity. And then suddenly one week I noticed I was spending about £1.10 to £1.20 a day, and I was like, oh wow, that's a bit weird. I haven't done anything differently. Why has it gone up? And I started thinking, like a lot of our residents have in the past, about, oh, it's typical, that's what happens when you get a smart meter, suddenly your bills go up. And I was thinking, oh wow, is this something in all these conspiracy theories? But no, of course not. What happened a few days later is I went to my freezer and realised that my freezer had got iced up. And it was the extra energy that was being used by my iced up freezer had pushed my usage up. But if I hadn't had the smart meter, I'd have been blissfully ignorant at how much that was costing me as an iced up freezer. But 10 to 20p a day is phenomenal. That's a massive amount of energy. So that's one of our biggest tips now, is defrost your freezer regularly, because it's a huge amount of energy demand that is just wasted.
So another thing to say for our particular client group is that there are accessible in-home displays called an AIHD that are available, and you can actually ask your supplier to provide you with one of those.
Yes, you can. Yes, absolutely. Okay. And if anybody has any difficulty getting one of those from their supplier, that's a good reason to call us, and we would then intervene and try and help you get one.
I need to shatter another myth.
Okay.
Are smart meters attached to any of your heating systems in the house? Can they suddenly start controlling things like your boilers?
Currently, as far as I'm aware, no. There are plans in the future to be able to do some kind of smart control, but that's mainly around the demand, the energy demand side. So the kind of things that are planned is things like your washing machines and your dishwashers, that kind of thing. So if in the future you have a, what will be called a smart appliance, you can set them to come on at low demand times. So this will be all linked to what's called dynamic tariffs. So your tariff will have cheaper rates at low demand times. So typically now, actually, this kind of time of a morning, most people are at work or out shopping, the kids are at school, at homes there's low demand. So it's this time of day, actually, that probably the grid would like you to put your dishwasher on, not at 8 o'clock in the morning, certainly not at 5 o'clock in the evening. So the idea would be you could go off to work or out for the day, you turn on your dishwasher or your washing machine or whatever, but the smart meter will tell it when you're in the low peak time. But obviously you still have that manual, you'll have that manual control. It won't just take over. You'll still have to set the settings and say what you want to happen or what you don't want to happen. And obviously in terms of heating controls, there are smart heating controls like Hive and Nest and a few others that are out on the market. But again, you have to set the settings. Nothing, you know, but as long as you set the settings, that's how they're going to work. Nothing can come in and override that. And obviously you can just disconnect them and make them manual anyway. So there's always control. There's not, nothing's going to just take over. Another interesting story I heard once, I remember doing a home visit years ago, and a lady said to me, oh, I don't want one of those smart meters. I don't want them to know when I'm in the shower. And I was like, how are they going to know you're in the shower? They don't have a camera. You know, it's not like, you know, the smart meter knows how much energy you're using, but it doesn't know what appliance, you know, because it doesn't know whether your washing machine's on or whether the shower's on. It just knows that energy's being used. This is nothing more complicated than they just need to know how much energy demand is going through your property.
Fantastic. Okay, so price rises have been in the news. We're all affected by them. It's horrendous. So the cost of living has gone up. How does your service help residents to reduce costs?
Okay, so one of the reasons we do this service is to help tackle fuel poverty. That's the main reason we do it. And really there are only two ways to tackle fuel poverty, and that's first of all increase income, and secondly reduce consumption of energy. And so the service I mentioned earlier, that's what we do. So we're trying to help people with energy advice or improve their homes to reduce consumption. But our money side of things, the benefits and the discounts and the debt advice is all about increasing income. And so whether you're in fuel poverty or not, that advice is the same. That's the two things that our service does, reduce consumption and increase income. So if we can do both of those things, we're helping everybody to get through this period in the best way that we can. And at the same time, we're hopefully making you warmer in your home, more comfortable in your home. So there's lots of positives that come out of the energy advice service.
Is there any particular energy change that our clients can make to save energy?
Oh, there's probably not one single change. There's probably a few top tips I can share with you, if that's
Let's
helpful.
Do that. Let's do top 10 tips.
Top 10. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I mentioned one just now, defrost your freezer. Yeah. That's definitely up there as one of the best things to do. You know, if you think if you've got a chest freezer, chest freezers where the lids don't shut properly because there's ice all around the top of the freezer, that's using massive amount of energy and therefore massive amount of money, probably several hundred pounds a year of energy if a chest freezer doesn't close properly.
Sure.
But yes, definitely defrost your freezers if you haven't got one that auto defrosts. If you've got freezers that are outside in an outbuilding or in a shed or something like that, again, that's unless you've got one that's specially designed for lower temperatures, you'll be using loads of energy. So think about getting that indoors into a warmer environment so it can function better. to save energy.
On the subject of freezers, should you fill them up with as much food as you can, or how do you make it efficient?
Yeah. I mean, not necessarily overloaded with food, yeah. But yeah, fairly full. I mean, if they're empty, you're just wasting energy, aren't you? You're using a lot of energy to freeze maybe two or three things, as you would a full freezer. So, but yes, they are designed to be used as opposed to sit there empty. So yeah, think about filling it up. So yeah, defrost freezer is one of them. Thinking about electric showers, I mentioned showers earlier. So electric showers are a really expensive item to run because they're typically between 7 and 10 kilowatts of power. And therefore you need to keep shower times as short as possible. So the government recommendations is 4-minute showers. We regularly go to homes, particularly where there are teenagers, who tell us that their teenagers are in the shower for 30 minutes or more. Frankly, that's a luxury we cannot afford, not in terms of bills, but also not in terms of climate change and carbon emissions. We really need to get shower times down so that, and you will really notice it if you cut your shower time, if you've got an electric shower, because it's a guzzler. Kettles, obviously, again, the kettle is a high energy usage because they're typically 2 or 3 kilowatts. Mm-hmm. And whilst they're not on for very long, they do actually use quite a lot of money in that short time period, particularly if you keep reboiling the kettle. So the best tip with the kettle is only boil the amount of water that you need. Don't boil too much because that's just wasted. You'll just be using energy to boil water that goes cold. So don't waste that money.
So I've actually bought a smaller kettle.
Yes.
So we've got one that does maybe 3 mugs. But yeah, that's been a big change for us.
Yeah, definitely. What else are the other big tips? So if you have an immersion tank, then again, that's another one to think about the times that it's on. So we go to lots of homes where immersion tanks are just left on 24/7.
Gosh.
So that's like having a giant kettle just running, you know, topping up the heat all the time. And again, that could be using several hundred pounds of energy a year for no reason. So if you've got an immersion tank, make sure it's on a timer, or if you can't have a timer fitted, then just manually turn it on and off for the time that you need. Again, if you're a single person or a couple, you probably only need it on for maximum an hour a day to get the heat that you need in the water. Sorry about that, got a bit of a tickle. What other good tips? Thermostats on your heating controls. Guidelines are for 21 degrees temperature in your living rooms or 18 for the rest of the property. So if your thermostat is currently set at more than 21, why don't you try turning it down a little, maybe drop it by a degree, see how you feel about that. But because for every 1 degree that you turn your thermostat down, it's quite a significant saving. I can't tell you on current prices, but probably I would think £100 a year easily. What else are big tips? Washing machine.
Yeah.
Wash at lower temperatures. So if you can wash at 30 or 40 degrees as opposed to 60, that's a good idea.
So people might be worried that that's not killing bacteria, but this is down to the soap powder that you're using?
Yeah. Most of the proprietary brands now function at 30 degrees.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if something's a bit dirty or grubby, you can always soak that a little bit in a bowl first.
Yeah.
And just think about your energy. And obviously with washing machines and dishwashers, make sure they're fully loaded. Don't put them on with only half a load unless you've got a half load button on your machine. Because, again, you're just wasting energy. You're just wasting energy and water to wash a half load instead of a full load. There's some obviously some really simple, easy tips. Don't leave your light bulbs on. Don't waste that money by having your light bulbs on when you're not in a room. That's probably
pulling your curtains.
Pulling the curtains. Closing your windows. Don't have your windows wide open with the heating on. That's just a waste. Carpets act like insulation on the floor. So if you're replacing your carpet, think about buying the best you can afford and putting in a decent underlay, because then you're insulating your floors.
Cool. I think that's really good. Thank you very much. The other tip was, of course, get a smart meter.
Get a smart meter, of course.
You've mentioned that a couple of times. I don't think we can stress strong enough, really, that that is probably the most important thing you can do at the moment.
Yeah, I think so. And I think particularly for accessing new tariffs, you know, it's definitely the way the industry is going. There are going to be these, what they call dynamic tariffs, where the tariff will fluctuate throughout the day and you'll get better deals. And if you haven't got smart meters, you just won't be able to access those better deals. So you'll be disadvantaged. And in fact, we've got a new project starting with, I mentioned British Gas Energy Trust earlier, we've got a new project starting with them next week, where we'll be able to supply some of these Hive thermostats that I mentioned, these smart thermostats to certain clients. And with that package, they're going to be offering a discounted tariff for the customers who take that. So yeah, I think, you know, as time goes by, there'll be all kinds of different ways to save money, but you'll need the smart meter in order to access those. And particularly as we move forward into electric vehicle territory, I think it's an absolute given that you're going to have a smart meter in an electric vehicle to access the right tariffs.
Okay, that's cool. There's a lot of talk about heat pumps at the moment. How can we get the right advice about whether a heat pump is appropriate for our homes?
Yeah, so I think just get some advice from somebody like us or a contractor who you trust. You know, there's lots of publicity about, oh, everyone needs to get a heat pump, but we feel that not necessarily every property is suited to heat pump, and it's really important that you do things in the right order. So it's really important that you get your home draft proofed and insulated as well as possible to get the best efficiency from the heat pump. So all I would say is, yeah, get some advice if you think that, you know, you'd like to maybe upgrade your home to a heat pump, then talk to us if you'd like to. Or if you're on low income and you think you might like to try and access a grant to get a heat pump, again, speak to us. There are quite a few different grants available at the moment that we can help residents access. We've got some grants that go through Devon County Council and some that go through more national schemes. But all of it starts with advice, so we would give some basic advice about the things to think about before going ahead with a heat pump.
Fantastic. Okay, we're getting to that time in the call where I'm just going to say to Jenny, we're going to unmute people. So Jenny, can you confirm when we've unmuted everybody? I'm just going to run next door, back in a tick. Right, sorry for that. I couldn't hear Jenny. We're unmuted, so has anybody got a question in the big wide world out there?
This is Les. Can I ask?
Les.
Good morning to everybody. And excuse me, I wanted to thank Tara for the discussion, because one of the things that's become revealed to me over time is that I'm a customer of EDF. And EDF have been, this is my own personal experience, on a relentless drive to push me onto direct debit. And that's taken the form of estimated bills being quite large, meters not being read over a period of time, and different, if you like, incentives, as they have like different tariffs. I'm on Economy 7. I do understand that to some people, some of the machinations and the complex payment systems that they have can actually sound a bit like voodoo. And I think the service that you've described and you give to people is absolutely valuable, because in the end analysis, it's getting through all that different specification and services that can be provided. It's about what you pay per unit, whether you're on, I'm at the moment looking to see whether standard tariff is probably going to be better for me than Economy 7, because we have meters here in metal boxes. I'm in a multiple occupancy flats, and the cloud reading system can't read it because the legislation says meters must be in metal containers, locked, etc. I know that everybody's spec is different, but all I'm trying to say is that I do appreciate the complexity that's being introduced into this area. Excuse me. And I think the service that you provide is absolutely valuable, because it just takes away the mystique, if you like, of energy provision.
Yeah, thanks, Les. Yeah, you hit nail on the head. It is extremely complex, and in fact, when we take on new recruits and we do the training, complexity is a word that we use often during that training. Everything about the energy industry is complex. We've got all these different meters. You've mentioned Economy 7. We've got all different types of meters, all different types of tariffs. We've got all different types of heating systems. We've got all different types of property, let alone the individuals and how they use their energy in their homes. The whole thing is a complete nightmare, to be honest. So that's why we offer the service. It's to try and just unpick the problems and try to put things into plain English to help you understand what's going on in your particular situation and what the solutions might be to resolve it. And certainly, yes, looking at things like whether it's better for you to be on Economy 7 or standard tariff is certainly something we could help you look at, for sure.
I'm interested to know that Tara was at our conference last year. Is there anybody on the call who's actually had a home visit who can share their experience of the home visit?
Hello, Graham. It's David here. It's David here.
Hi, David.
I'm waiting. I did miss the call, actually. I did want a visit, a home visit, but I'll get in touch with them again at some point. Because from listening to Tara's talk, it's been absolutely enlightening, shall we say, to say the least, about all these bits and pieces you can save money on. It's wonderful. If I could just ask a quick question, Tara. I was interested a while back at the solar panels, but I just wanted to ask you, how long does it take approximately how many years, shall we say, to get your money back on the solar panels? And are they an advantage if you were to sell the house having solar panels on it?
I personally think they're an advantage going forward, because I think, as I mentioned, as we move forward into an era of more electric vehicles, people are going to want to know how they're going to charge their vehicles. So I think any property with solar on the roof is going to have a slight advantage over those that don't. And also, I just think as people are becoming much more conscious about doing the right thing in terms of climate change and reducing energy demand, you know, people just want to feel like they're doing something positive. So my personal opinion is solar panels are a good thing all the way around. In terms of payback, it's hard to say, because it would depend how many solar panels you put on the roof, and what your energy usage is. Because obviously, if you're a high energy user, you'll get payback much more quickly than if you're a low energy user. But I think at the moment they're saying typically anything between 4 to 6 year payback.
David, I've got solar panels on my house, and I moved from an 1870s Victorian house that was always cold to a new build house last year. So I've got a heat pump, I've got solar panels, but I've also got a battery. So it's storing energy during the day, and it doesn't need to be bright sunshine for solar panels to work. This is a bit of a myth buster here. It's just about those UV rays. So what we do is my partner tends to put the dishwasher on when our battery is full. So we just look in the garage. There's a little unit there that says that there's the battery is full, and that's when we choose to do things like put the washing machine on or whatever. So we are making savings. I also, because I sold my house at the right time, I took the leap of purchasing an electric vehicle, which happened a lot sooner than I was thinking. I'm very lucky because I've got a charger actually on my house, so I can charge it at home. The big problem actually is if you're expecting to charge at petrol stations and things, which is a bit difficult in Oakhampton way. There's just no chargers there really. So we found that it's a bit about balance really. In the long term, I think it's going to be a good thing. Certainly it's working out for us to have solar panels on the
Well, I was thinking more of my age. Am I ever going to recover that money? If not, it'll be the house will be sold and passed on to my kids, possibly. I tell you what, my house. Sorry, Tara, my house is over 100 years old. It's about a midway terraced house in Exmouth. And believe it or not, I've got insulation, loft insulation, this, double glazing, you name it, I've got it. But I still find this room gets cold. This house does get cold, extremely cold. Yeah, and the bills are not not low either. The bills are quite high for the gas. My electric has stayed stable, funny enough, at about 50 quid a month. The gas has gone through the roof, literally. The gas bill, but these are cold houses. Yeah.
And of course the gas price has gone up quite a lot in the last 2 years. So it definitely sounds like we should come out and do a home visit for you, David, and try and work out why
would.
That food's a bit cold.
Could you get the number off of Graham or who's ever, Jenny perhaps will give you my home number.
No
and
problem.
Give me a call.
Yeah, no problem. We'll do that.
I've thoroughly enjoyed your talk. Tara,
you,
it's been wonderful. Thank you very much talking to us.
Thank you.
Tara, what's the news about energy tariffs? Because we're sort of told that this is largely down to the Ukraine conflict. But what are the factors that have caused this sort of increase?
Oh, there's lots, isn't there? So yeah, it was all kinds of things. It was coming out of COVID, and there was a high demand on energy where everybody was getting back into production, so there was extra stuff happening where we all got back to normal. Yeah, I was just going to mention, we've got a new project starting this year, which is called SMEAPS, which stands for Smart Energy Action Plans. So the things that David was just mentioning, that's exactly why we're developing this service, is so that on the standard home visit, it's much more generalist around insulation and energy saving. Mm. But we're aware that, because everything's changing out there, that things are moving really rapidly in terms of, the solar, the batteries, the heat pumps, the electric vehicles, and these new dynamic tariffs. It's all getting more complex than ever before. So we've developed a new service that we'll be rolling out hopefully in the spring, where some of our team are getting some extra training on a bit more of the technical stuff around these more complex issues. So that after a home visit, if somebody's got some extra questions or wants to dig further into some of these more technical issues, they can have a second consultation with one of our more senior advisors to look at these more technical details.
I'm reading a really interesting book on psychology at the moment, and I can't give you the title because it's got a swear word in it. but one of the chapters last week it is basically called Do Something. And I suppose the message here is to say, do something, do a bit of research, get a bit of help and try and make a difference in some way. Because I think in our experience, we've seen with all of the interventions that we do for our clients, mm-hmm. that some of them can be life changing, and saving a little bit of money here and there has a benefit to other things. If it's stopping you from going out and interacting with people, it's a good thing to do if it's freeing up money.
Definitely.
All right. Any more questions from anybody?
Yes. Hello. Thank you, Tara. That was really interesting, your talk. It's Karen here. I am a bit of a technophobe, and it took me years to actually get a mobile phone. So and I had to get help with that, which so that shows you where I'm coming from. I keep getting asked to by EDF to have a smart meter, and I say no, mainly because I have storage heaters. I fulfil all the criteria, and I got my storage heaters on a disability grant, and they're manual controlled, which suits me to a T. They're manual controlled. I have little bubbles because I'm severely sighted, and I know what's low, what's medium, what's high. I'm a bit worried about when these run out, and I'm quite sure I would fulfil again any criteria to get new smart meter, new storage heaters on a grant. But a friend of mine got new storage heaters about 2 or 3 years ago, and she was instructed that she had to have, in order to fulfill the criteria, she had to have a smart meter. And the storage heaters were connected to her smart meter and thermal controls to do with the temperature.
Mm,
and so it was outside of her manual. It was as if the computer did take over a bit. She had a bit of a... She went away for 2 weeks, leaving it on low, and the temperature changed and it went high. And when she came back, it shouldn't have gone high. And so she was very upset because she had to pay her bill and the energy consumption had gone, it hadn't gone low again afterwards. So I'm just wondering, I mean, if I had someone come to visit me from you, you know, would they be able to talk me through, is there a way of getting storage heaters that are manually controlled but still connected to the smart meter? Is that a clear question?
Absolutely. And there's two things I can explain there from what you've described. So first of all storage heaters are linked to the meter, whether it's a smart meter or a standard meter. All storage heaters are linked to the meter because that's how you get your nighttime tariff.
Yes.
So no matter whether they're the old storage heaters or the new storage heaters, they're all connected to the meter. Okay, so that's the first thing, is it doesn't matter which type of meter or which type of heaters, they all work exactly the same way. With regard to your friend's new, more modern thermostatically controlled ones, the smart meter doesn't control it. Each storage heater has its own controls, and I know this because my last house had these in, so I know exactly how they work. There's loads of settings, and one of the settings is you have to set what's called, I can't remember the exact word, but it's like a background temperature. So it sounds to me that with your friend that background temperature was incorrectly set. So even though she had like turned them off because she was going to be away, it sounds like the storage heaters were kicking in based on that default temperature. But that's definitely one of the settings that our advisors could have a look at for anybody that's in that situation, to make sure that all of those controls are set correctly. And then lastly, yes, for your question, of course, one of our advisors would be happy to talk through with you exactly what would suit you in your personal circumstances, you know, looking at your home and talking through how it all works with you, and showing you some videos or some examples of how it all works. But the thermostatically controlled storage heaters are amazing. They are really, 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 really efficient, much, much better than manual ones. And you still do have manual control. It's just a matter of getting the settings right, so setting the timers, setting the temperatures, and you always have that manual override if you need to. So at the moment, you know, one of my friends has got them, so I know he's turned up his temperature in this cold weather compared to what it's normally set at. So you still have a good element of manual control no matter what the type of heater.
Karen, it's great. Can I ask you, how do you read your meter at the moment and supply the readings?
Well, I've had trouble because I can't do it. It's my meter is outside, and so my son, you know, what was happening from EDF, they would send me a bill which was estimated, which was over the top, and then I'd have to wait until a month, you know, when my son was around and he could do it, and then we had to phone it through. But now I'm on what's called a budget monthly payment scheme, which I pay a certain amount every month, and I know what it is. It goes out by direct debit to EDF, and then after 6 months, they come to read my meter. So it's a little bit better for me. But yes, no, I mean, it's not like I could read the meter anyway if it was indoors, but yes, they have been asking that I go on to a smart meter, you know, at various times, a bit like Les, actually. They, you know, so it's something I know I've got to consider, though I am a bit scared of it. You know, I am, Graham. It's, and I'm sure that there are other people out there who are also a little bit scared of the whole computer situation, you know, thinking, oh, is it gonna, especially with that, what happened to my friend, you know, thinking, is the computer, you know, gonna take over and suddenly put it up high or put it down low when I want to be in manual control of it, you know. But from what Tara said, that's helped ease a few of my fears, and I hope, if you have the phone numbers in the office, you know, I will ring through. And because also, Tara, I mean, do you help with, if you came and you said, oh no, it's about time these storage heaters were replaced, can you help begin a process of, you know, either getting a grant or going through whatever channel I need to go through to get the new storage heaters?
Yes, exactly what we do. So when we're in a home visit and on the telephone, we help assess what grants you'll be, which grants you would qualify for, and then can guide you through that process of applying and being there to answer questions. Because, you know, we're aware that, as you said, there's lots of technology that's confusing, and also installers. A lot of the installers talk a lot of jargon. They think everyone understands what they're talking about, and then we act as that go-between, and we try to make a bit of sense of everything that's going on. Because at the end of the day, there's always an explanation for everything. You know, like what you mentioned about your friend and her heaters. There's always an explanation, but it just needs someone that understands a little bit about how what goes on behind the scenes to try and pick it apart and understand what's gone wrong, so that we can then rectify it and make sure that doesn't happen again.
Yes, thank you.
Very welcome.
I've just looked at the time, and we've literally got 2 minutes to go. So I'm going to say thank you, everybody, for taking part today, and thank you, Tara, for joining us. If anybody would like to be put in touch with ECO, give us a call in the office, and we will supply information to you. And we are in the process of preparing a new fact sheet about your services. And as I always say, we look at everything from a Devon-wide perspective, so it won't just have your details on it. We'll also do some research for the other companies that are supporting us. Forthcoming events. Every Wednesday we hold chit-chat calls. These are your opportunity to air thoughts, concerns and ideas and share your recent stories about living with sight loss in a safe space. We also share news about Devon and Sight and its ongoing development. So that's every Wednesday on this telephone number. Our next sight loss speaker event is on Tuesday the 13th of February, and it's an introduction to Devon Carers. This is a service provided by Devon-based charity West Bank, and is commissioned jointly by Devon County Council and the NHS Devon Clinical Commissioning Group to provide services and assessments to unpaid carers across Devon. So our guest speaker is Hayley Buscombe, who's the Community Engagement Lead with Devon Carers. So that's next month. Thank you again, Tara, for joining us. Thank you for all of our listeners. And as always, if you want to listen to back to this event, the recording will be on the website in about a week's time. So thank you, everybody, and goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.